And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to the Offside Rule WSL edition. Coming up on the show, it's advantage Chelsea in the WSL title race after an absolute belter of a game against Manchester City.
Greenwood with the delivery. Oh, brilliant save! Sensational save there by Anne Katrin Berger, one of the best saves of the season.
A two-all draw in a game that will go a long way to deciding who will be champions in 2021. Welcome along to the show. I'm Lindsay Hooper.
And I'm Kate Borsay, and welcome to our Wednesday edition of the Offside Rule WSL edition. We've switched from our regular Tuesday show in honour of what was being dubbed as a title-deciding match between Manchester City and Chelsea.
Alongside us today, we've got a player who Everton boss Willie Kirk told us on last week's show is the best technical player he's ever seen in the women's game. England's most capped player, Reading midfielder Farrah Williams, joins us. Farrah, did you hear that praise last week?
I did. I seen it on Twitter. Somebody, I think it might have been yourselves actually, added me in it. So yeah, I mean, it was really nice to hear and read. Along with that, I seen you mentioned Jill Scott as well. So yeah, it's always nice to hear comments like that.
You must have heard that before about your technical ability anyway.
I think it's always been spoken about. I think, you know, if I was coached a little bit more when I was younger, I think, you know, a lot of that was just natural and stuff that I'd worked on myself rather than being coached. I wish I was young enough to play in the game longer now when, you know, with the quality of coaches that the game now has.
Oh, no, Farrah, that actually makes me so upset when you say that. Listen, Farrah, it's been quite the week of football, hasn't it? Give us your reaction to the plans for a European Super League. They, of course, sort of tagged the women's game onto the plan for the men's game. It's now just about to sink without a trace. I think it's lasted a record-beating 48 hours. But what was your initial reaction to the plans that you were hearing and the possible involvement of the women's teams as well?
You know what? It was like those 48 hours didn't happen. Like, I heard about it, didn't even get a chance to read about it. I tried to listen to Gary Neville and Jamie Carragher on Monday Night Football talk about it. It's just sad. It's sad that, you know, the six that were trying to go into, you know, into the Super League, the so-called top six, you know, in terms of their position within the Premier League, you know, who determines that they are the top six teams within that. It's disappointing that, but it's been going that way. So it's disappointing in terms of it's greed, it's money. But that's how the men's game has been going for a long time. So it doesn't surprise me. What's disappointed is that, you know, these, you know, the businessmen, because that's what they are now within our game, these to do such a thing, in, you know, when the world, you know, has been through, you know, a pandemic for the last year and people have been struggling financially in all different areas. So it's just sad to think that they go and break away and do, you know, you talk about dreams of players and teams. You look at the likes of Leicester when they won the league a few years back, in terms of trying to shatter that, in terms of them not getting the possibility of them playing in Europe because of that. So yeah, I mean, it's disappointing. I'm glad those 48 hours are crazy and it's all, you know, with the media and the players and people pushing it's fell flat on its face like it should have.
Were you surprised, Farrah, that the women's game were tagged into this, especially when you consider the match that we've all just watched between Chelsea and Manchester City? Had that gone ahead and they'd been part of this, despite this new TV deal being signed and all the furore that we've had around it, that would have had a consequence?
Oh yeah, most definitely. And that would have been, you know, the saddest thing about it for the work that's gone into the women's game over the years, with not much reward behind it in terms of, you know, TV, etc. And now actually getting that real big push and signing this 3-year deal where Sky and BBC are going to showcase the women's game. It would have been sad, again, if that opportunity was taken away from the people that have given so much to our game. So, yeah, as I said, I'm just glad that you know, it's over and it's not happening, and we can continue to enjoy the beautiful game that everybody loves so much.
It also would have meant, of course, no Lyon in that European Super League either.
That would have been crazy.
Liverpool women would have been in there as a championship team and a bit of a club in crisis, really, as far as I can understand from behind the scenes. It would have meant that newly formed women's teams like Manchester United, like Real Madrid, would have been included in it as well. So it basically would have been a very odd women's European Super League, wouldn't it?
It's just crazy. It shows what money can do with it within not just our game, but in society. You know, as you mentioned, teams that you know, work hard. You go back to anything in life. You know, you should be rewarded for hard work, and that's in anything you do. You know, in any job that you have, most of the time through hard work and desire and whatever else, you're rewarded for it. And yeah, as you mentioned, you know, these teams would have gone in it without having to put the work in, and it would have just been a case of a result of, you know, billionaires being able to buy their way, you know, into something, you know, that is, it would have been, you know, financially far bigger than what the game is at the minute.
Thankfully, it's defunct for now anyway. We've got you here for analysis purposes, Farah. We know that you like to analyse games. We're going to get you to go to the nth degree with this one, because it was a real entertaining match between Manchester City and Chelsea. It finished 2-2, and we'll move on to that now.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
You're listening to the Offside Rule WSL edition from Muddy Knees Media and The Athletic.
Mistake by Bright, and it's tapped in. It's 2-2.
Well, it was a spectacular night at the Academy Stadium in this high-energy end-to-end title topper between Chelsea and Manchester City. Early pressure from City was absorbed by Chelsea, who made a set-piece count by going one up through Sam Kerr. Retaliation then from Manchester City, Lauren Hemp, the provider for Chloe Kelly, to make it 1-1.
A superb solo run from Sam Kerr, stopped by Ellie Roebuck, earned her side a penalty. Pernilla Harder converted that to make it 2-1 to Chelsea. Then 5 minutes later, City responded through Lauren Hemp to level the game at 2-2. There was a world-class save from Anne-Catherine Berger that kept Chelsea in the game. And there was an opportunity late on for Lucy Bronze to win it for City, but 2-2 it remained. A few different talking points going into this one, Farah, then. No captain for Chelsea. Magdalena Eriksson was ruled unfit, and she didn't pass the medical test before starting that one. Maren Melder out. Millie Bright having to stand in as skipper. Ingle dropped into a back four. And no Steph Horton for City because of that ongoing Achilles problem. So we saw Greenwood in that unusual position of being in a central role rather than fullback. What did you make of the teams going into it?
Yeah, I think pretty much they've been the teams that have, you know, been fit to play of late. You know, I think Steph's been a big loss for Man City. I think her leadership skills within that Manchester City team is, and you know, a hugely missed, not just at Manchester City, but at England as well. So I think she's been one of the players for Manchester City that's been a really big standout that's missing. And I think we've seen tonight with Eriksson, you know, the impact that she's had at Chelsea, you know, in that centre-half role. She's their captain. I think at times, although we've seen Ingle play centre-half before for Chelsea, it was just a little bit disjointed with herself and Millie Bright. So, you know, for that, and in terms of being, you know, steady at the back, I think Eriksson was a big miss for them tonight.
The game was open, it was end to end, and I think, you know, even though City started off the stronger side, Chelsea came back into it, and the last 45, well, I suppose the last 15 was all about pressure from City. Just from a general perspective, Farah, this game, great to see both sides slugging it out against each other. If this was perhaps another game, and I don't want to compare it too much to the men's game, but this could have been a really tight affair, couldn't it? It could have been a tight, nervy affair. But instead, both sides went for it. And that was the joy in it.
Yeah, I mean, it was hugely entertaining for the neutral. It was two teams in a top of the league clash with only, you know, two games remaining after this, knowing that, you know, for Manchester City, only a win would have been good enough, you know, based on the teams that are left for them both to play. Chelsea knew they only needed a point from it, so they just had to stay in the game. And that's something that I think, you know, with the experiences Chelsea have had together now and how Emma's grown and developed that team, those experiences of being in their moments when they're under pressure, just the way that you've seen them deal with it this season. You look at the first leg of the Champions League against Wolfsburg, when their backs were against it, they was able to stay in the game in big moments. And they've done that again tonight against a Manchester City team that was really going for the win.
Lauren Hemp was a standout player. We will come on to Ann-Kathrin Berger's save as well. But in terms of Hemp and the performance she put in here, was it one of the performances of the season for you?
I think, you know, Lauren Hemp has been fantastic for Manchester City this year. I think her and Chloe Kelly on either flank have been, you know, standout players for them and probably their most consistent. Likewise, Kirby and Kerr. But yeah, I think for her, I think, you know, if she can add a little bit of better decision making with her end product, she could be a real top player. And she's young. So in terms of her decision making at the moment, it is a bit of trial and error. But in terms of taking the game to Chelsea and really getting at Jess Carter, who, you know, for Chelsea hasn't played for long periods of time, I think she did that really well. And if anything was going to come from the game in terms of Manchester City's attack, it would have definitely been down that left-hand side with Hemp. And it was, you know, proved that with the cross for the goal and then getting herself in a position to score.
Who are you most impressed with, Farah?
Erin Cuthbert for Chelsea. I think in terms of, you know, the battle that she had out there with Lucy and being really front foot, you know, Chelsea were playing a mid block and wanting to play on the counter attack. And, you know, Erin's been, again, another player that has been in and out of that Chelsea team this season, played different positions. But in terms of having to deal with, you know, one of the best players in the world in Lucy Bronze and currently the best player, I thought the job that she did on Lucy was fantastic. And her deliveries from set plays were dangerous. She was somebody that, you know, that if you take away, you know, Kirby and Kerr and Kelly and Hemp, I thought she was a standout for me.
We have to have a word on that save because it was a world-class one. Hemp's header looked like it was heading for that left-hand corner of the goal and it looked like City might get all 3 points. But Ann-Kathrin Berger, she just about got her arm to the ball, which flicked the ball onto the crossbar. But there was also the added factor of Chloe Kelly being in her way and she had to push her out the way first. In terms of saves, that's got to be up there.
You know what? It's the best save I've seen within the women's game. I mean, point blank, you know, and as you said, bodies in front of her, having to find a way to see, you know, fractions of the ball to be able to get herself into a position to tip that onto the crossbar. It's fantastic. But she's been fantastic with Chelsea. She's been probably the standout player. You know, we spoke loads about Kirby and Kerr and their contributions and Harder in terms of goals. But when you talk about big moments in big games, when you need somebody to keep you in a game, she's done that fantastically well for Chelsea this season and has probably been their best player.
Yeah, she had a dead leg as well. And actually after the game, Emma Hayes just saying that she's world class. Her and Christiane Endler, PSG's goalkeeper, are who Emma Hayes rates as two of the best goalkeepers in the world. And in terms of this game, I wouldn't disagree with her. Interesting, Farah, that three of the goals in this game came all within kind of a 9-minute period. So you had Cuthbert's corner, which then went in off the head of Sam Kerr. Again, in a game like this, you've got to get your set pieces right. That was a great example of that, a good settler for Chelsea. Then he had the retaliation from City, Chloe Kelly pouncing in, Lauren Hemp providing, and then that penalty converted by Pernille Harder, won by Sam Kerr. And that was a great run by Sam Kerr, wasn't it, to earn that penalty. She actually moves ahead of Vivian Miedemar now in the WSL scoring charts. So top of the charts for Sam Kerr, 18 goals in the league this season. What's she like to come up against, Farah? Give us some intel.
In terms of the way Chelsea play, she's very suited to their style in terms of playing on the counter-attack, her speed in behind. She's so direct in behind. And she's somebody that will get lots of chances in games. And, you know, for the amount of chances she gets, you know, this year she's certainly converted more. But, yeah, she's just fantastic. She's, you know, she's a player that plays on the shoulder of defenders and runs in behind. And any defender will tell you if you keep the game in front of them, it always remains comfortable. So she's somebody that will make you face your own goal. And for defenders, it's horrible to defend against.
I was watching her towards the end of the game and she was in the Chelsea goal mouth sort of trying to add her presence, and she sort of beefed herself up a bit like a cat when a cat tries to make themselves big. I just saw her rise, this kind of, and I was like, oh, Sam Kerr. So, you know, obviously her physical presence is a useful asset to her as well.
Yeah, and you saw that in the first minute of the game. I think, you know, Lucy Bronze and her had She ran in behind Lucy Bonds into the channel. I think it was within 2 minutes. Lucy Bonds then got the better of her, put it through her legs. And then it was just the recovery and that fierceness and that fight within her that wasn't going to allow Lucy to develop any further up the pitch. And she took her out from behind and, you know, give away a free kick in a good area and then, you know, allowed for her team to regroup. So you've seen that really early on. She's competitive. She's a big girl, physically, you know, somebody that will put herself about. And yeah, just horrible to play against.
I think we have to have a word about the referee too, because I thought she played this one really well, Rebecca Welsh. She played advantage when she needed to, got the penalty decision right. What were your impressions?
Yeah, I thought, you know, all of the officials today were spot on. I don't think there was any controversy in any decisions that happened. I don't think they let anything go in terms of letting the game flow and having, you know, momentum to the game. They allowed for that. I think that the only booking was Alex Greenwood, which was deserved, you know, late on Frank Kirby. So, yeah, it was a well-refed and managed game from all three of the officials. And that's the sort of officialing, in talking about officialing, that's the type of, you know, officials that we want within our game, you know, can keep up with the game, understands the game, allows the game to flow. I think, you know, there's been frustration. You've heard managers, you've heard players come out and talk about their frustration with, you know, how the games are officiated. So, yeah, it was nice that, you know, it was a game where you could praise the officials for the job that they did.
Absolutely. In some of the post-match interviews that we saw on telly, Berger was one of the players that stepped up. She said it was a game she doesn't want to play in again. She thought it was a nervous game and that she doesn't like taking plaudits. She doesn't like the focus being on her.
Yeah, I think you can see that in her personality. She likes to just, you know, she's a player that plays for the team, likes to get a job done, realises that the impact that she can have within the team. So, yeah, I mean, in terms of nerves, it surprises me that you know, the way that they talk, and you heard Emma Hayes talking about, you know, the nerves that she had, because actually the calmness that, you know, that the Chelsea players showed throughout the game in moments that were difficult for them when their backs were against it, you wouldn't have seen, you know, in their body language, you know, any of their players that looked like they were a little bit rattled within any moment of the game. And that's where I said their experience is really coming through in terms of being in their moments before and having those experiences, and they've grown from them.
And after Emma Hayes spoke about this horrendous 45 minutes, which she hated watching and she felt it was very uncomfortable, she did also talk about the resilience that this Chelsea team have shown. 2 points clear now, with two games to play and a huge match on Sunday against Bayern Munich. Is resilience the word that you would use?
I think you have to be resilient. You have to be resilient enough to stay in games. And I think that definitely they're showing that. I think, you know, Emma's certainly managed the players well enough for them to be together. They stick together, I think, in good and bad. So, yeah, I think at any top level sport, I think resilience and that mental toughness in really difficult moments is a standout, because if you have that, then, you know, your natural ability will come to fruition anyway.
Gareth Taylor afterwards saying a little bit disappointed. He was quite deflated. Still games to play and points to play for, he says. They gave away two chances in the first half. But he did think that in the second half, particularly towards the end of it, his team looked like the only team that were going to score. Not sure that was necessarily true, but it was obviously trying to put a positive spin on it. Is there anyone that you thought sort of could have done better today, for it? It was an entertaining game, but it wasn't without error, was it?
I mean, I think everybody, I thought there was some really good individual performances. I wouldn't say anybody could play better. I think, you know, the goals, if you dissect the goals, the four of them were preventable. So individual errors in terms of, you know, that cost the goals, and actually goals that they probably should have got scored, they didn't. So you've got Lucy, you've got Beth England right at the end, where she, you know, they both could have put those chances away. So there was moments in games where players, I feel, could have been better in terms of execution in the final third. And the goals, I think, were preventable in terms of the defending around them. I think, you know, for the first one, you know, Alex Greenwood's positioning on the goalpost, you know, there was only one way that ball was going to go if it was directed in their direction, and that was in the back of the net. I think Millie Bright for the cross, yes, the cross shouldn't have been allowed to be put in, and Jess Carter probably could have done better with, you know, blocking Hemp from crossing it. But, you know, Millie normally would be in a better position to make a better contact. You know, she's kind of flicked her leg out. So for me, you know, again, that's preventable. The penalty, I think, you know, for me, Alex Greenwood needs to do better. When Sam Kerr's running at her, she maybe can delay, because we could see Lucy Bronze, you know, breaking her neck to get back into a position to help. And then the last goal, Frank Kirby, you know, it's no reflection of her performance or her season, but, you know, it's an error that she wouldn't normally make, and it's cost them, you know, a goal and then a draw.
Well, let's get some more reaction to this match with The Athletic's women's football correspondent, Katie Wyatt, who's been at the game and has been in the post-match press conferences. Katie, great to have you with us. I suppose, first of all, what's been the standout comments in the post-match pressers?
Yeah, I mean, I think the one that was very impossible to ignore was Emma Hayes went into quite a lot of detail about just how awful that game was for her to watch, and said that she hated the second half just because it was so difficult and it could have gone either way. She was saying that she felt like someone had yanked her belly button up into her mouth.
Swallowed her belly button.
Yanked up into, that's a bit weird actually, if she would have said that. That's far less weird, even though it was quite weird what she said. But just sort of going on about quite a bit of insight into what it's like as a manager to be in charge of and overseeing a game like that. And I think she was sort of alluding to the fact that it was so fraught and so tense and so much was happening that she actually put a lot of power onto the players. And she was saying that I was very much just standing there for that final half an hour with my hands in my pockets and praying, because it's just so little that you can do to make an impact when a game is so fraught and tense like that. So I feel like that was the most standout thing, and it was just amusing but also very fascinating, I think, to hear that how she had lived and processed the game like that.
We should let listeners to the show know where you are, Katie. You're at a tram stop outside the Etihad. So the background noise, very much the busy streets of Manchester this evening. Farah, would you like to chuck a question at Katie?
For me, in terms of, we'll talk about the Man City, in terms of the second half, when they needed a goal, what was the reaction to Ellen White coming off? That was the only thing that in the game I thought was a bit strange, when they're chasing a goal and, you know, we all know Ellen's goal-to-game ratio is so high. Why, if they're, you know, looking for 3 points, would they take her out of the game?
Yeah, it was an interesting one, because I was sat next to Tom Garry at the Telegraph, and he actually turned to me with sort of 20 minutes left and said, oh, what are you making of this for City without a forward? And it was really, really strange from that perspective, that, as Farah was saying, that we always know that Ellen White is a very valuable goal threat and probably not the most obvious substitution when City were chasing like that. But I think from my perspective, or certainly where I was sat, it did look at times that City had five or six forwards almost, with the relentlessness that Kelly and Hemp and Lavelle and Lucy Bronze were getting forward and peppering that back line and trying to get in behind Chelsea. There was just so much to go at in that team. So I do think it was an odd one, but at the same time, I think there was the just relentlessness that City played with in that final half an hour in particular. It was very one of those where you were watching and you really could have gone either way at any point in the game. But certainly at that stage, I think especially, it could have gone either way.
Do you not think with the relentlessness, we spoke about wide areas in terms of Hemp had the running of Jess Carter, especially in that last 20 minutes spell. Somebody like Ellen, because there was times where Hemp and Kelly had beat the fullback, but in terms of having a centre point, in terms of a striker to aim for, they couldn't. And so they were reliant on bodies to then get up to speed with them and get in back, get in the box for cutbacks, as opposed to if they had Ellen White in there, they could have, you know, put a cross in and then had players that were coming up to follow up with a second ball. I feel like they lost that little bit when Ellen went off, in terms of when they did beat the fullback, they wasn't able to just put balls into the box.
I know exactly what you mean, because I think that's a problem that they also have at England level. I think that especially in that Canada game, there were so many times when Hemp got in behind and then it was like, well, who's she crossing to? Where's the end point? And I think that the fact that it is a problem at England level makes a lot of sense that it was then a problem for Manchester City today, because we know that City obviously supply so many players to the England team and are kind of really the spine or the backbone of the England team. So I think that it's an interesting conundrum for Team GB going forward, as well as it was for City tonight, because it's something that, as I was saying, that we saw in that last England game, and then to see it repeated on this scale with slightly different players was almost unsurprising. And it's just, I think, a shame from City's perspective that they didn't have a more obvious central threat for all they were getting those bodies forward.
I just love her comments about her family watching and noticing that the colour drained from her face in the last 45 minutes as well. She gave some absolutely brilliant answers. I know she was asked about equal pay as well. And she just responded that the only thing she's worried about tonight is equal cups of tea for her stress levels.
That would be me.
An entertaining post-match presser there from Emma Hayes. Katie, I think we'll leave you to it. Safe travels back home.
That was Katie Wyatt of The Athletic. And here is how the remainder of the season plays out for both Chelsea and City now. Starting on Kate with Saturday.
Yeah, that's right. Chelsea face Bayern Munich. We've mentioned this already, but it's away in the first leg of their Champions League semi-final. The home fixture is on May the 2nd. Should we touch on this one very quickly and just say, Farah, I'm so excited for this one. I think it's with Chelsea. I think Emma Hayes played tonight's game personnel-wise with maybe a slight nod to this game as well. She's got the depth in her squad. Do you think that I'm correct in this assumption? I don't know whether I'm being falsely positive or not, but I really like Chelsea for this.
Yeah, no, I think Chelsea have a fantastic chance of progressing, you know, to the final. I think what they need not to do is look at the result that Wolfsburg had against them recently and think that the game will be easier than it is. I think Bayern have had a fantastic season. And I'm sure Emma, as you said, she will remind her players of that and make sure, you know, as she said in a press conference, that they're going to have to be resilient and, you know, in the away leg and stay in the game. You know, if it's going to be anything like the first leg they had against Wolfsburg, they've been there, they know how to do it. They need not to concede. And if they can nick an away goal, it'll be perfect to bring back to that home leg.
And in the league, they have to go to Spurs, but that fixture is being rearranged from May the 2nd due to the Champions League. Then on the last day of the season, they face your Reading team, Farrow. It's at home on the 9th of May. You could have a say yet in this title race. They think it's all over.
We could. And you know, normally when we play against Chelsea, they're normally tighter games. The game we had, you know, with Chelsea before, just after Christmas, first game back after Christmas. As a squad at Reading, we were disappointed, you know, 5 or 6-0. I can't remember. It was too big a scoreline to remember.
You've erased it.
I do try and do that. And there was one the other week and I've erased that too. I'm not even going to mention it. I do try to do that and move on quickly. So, but normally, you know, Chelsea and Reading fixtures are normally quite tight. So, you know, Chelsea will know that we'll go there going to get points. You know, we've had a disappointing season ourselves. So, you know, we want to finish a season on a high and we've got 3 games remaining and want to try and get maximum points. So we ain't going to make it easy for them. But, you know, based on the form they've had this year, they're very strong and it's going to be difficult for us to get a result.
Well, Man City face Birmingham next week and then they're at West Ham on the final day of the season. As Gareth Taylor pointed out, there are still games to play. Both those teams fighting for survival near the bottom of the table. But I think if Man City are prescriptive enough, they shouldn't be too much of an issue.
No, they shouldn't. They should be games, you know, that Man City should win. But Man City this year, we've seen that have struggled against teams that bank up against them and they find it hard to break down. They, you know, the Brighton game, both Brighton games are examples of that. And then, you know, ourselves, you know, an 87th minute winner. So they have struggled against teams that play a real low block and they have to find ways of, as I mentioned, breaking them down. So they'll be difficult because, as you mentioned, they're two teams that are fighting relegation and fighting to stay in the league. So they're not going to be easy as well. So there still could be some twists in these remaining games for both Chelsea and Manchester City.
We hope so. We like jeopardy. That's the word of the week, jeopardy in football. There is one more match this week that we need to bring you up to speed with, and it's an important one at the bottom of the table.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer, if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This is the Offside Rule WSL edition, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Well, this took place on Tuesday night. Relegation threatened Aston Villa moved off the foot of the Women's Super League after a goalless draw at fellow strugglers West Ham. So Villa now level on points with Bristol City, but have a better goal difference. That's why they're one up. The bottom two meet at the Banks Stadium on Saturday. What a corker that's going to be. West Ham move up to ninth with the points, and they host fifth place Everton on Sunday. What do you make of this relegation battle, Farah? I need to just plainly ask you, who's your favourite to stay up and who are you really worried about?
I think West Ham will stay up. I think they've got enough about them to stay up. I think it's, you know, between Villa and Bristol to go down. So, yeah, I think that game you mentioned at the weekend will be, you know, a massive, what's going to be a six-pointer for them.
Six-pointer, isn't it? Yeah.
The game that could decide who goes down and who stays up with the games remaining.
And speaking of erasing memory, Villa will be wanting to do that. They lost 8-0 to Man City in the FA Cup last weekend. Hopefully they can put that one behind them. A defeat like that, Farah, actually, you saying that and you've experienced some of these. Is it easy to move on from? I mean, does everyone have to take the tactic like you do, which is just forget that it even happened?
I mean, I have that tactic for experiences of understanding, you know, defeat and having to move on quickly from it. But it depends where you are in terms of, you know, your team performances. I think if it's been a build-up of games that you've been losing, they're always then really, really hard to come back from. I think if it's a one-off, I think reflection and moving on and putting it to bed, it is easier. But yeah, losing one of games, it doesn't help. And or you know, Reading's case in terms of performances, we've been getting lots of draws and you know, not many wins or not enough wins for what we expect. So that 5-0, I think it affected us massively. I think it showed that in the Spurs game in the FA Cup at the weekend. We just hadn't recovered defensively. I think we're a bit fragile from it. I think you could see that in the performance. But we've had a good week of training now. This week's been, you know, really good, and hopefully we get a good result against Birmingham at the weekend.
The one observation I've made of Reading this season, I don't even know whether you've heard some of these opinions, Farah, if you tuned in sporadically, but it's this consistency feeling. Is that something that irritates you, that you go on these runs and you absolutely shock some of the top teams and then you'll fade away a little bit, recover again for a patch?
Yeah, I mean, you see, we have performances against Man City where we concede in the 87th minute and we're in a game and we had chances within that game. And then we go and lose 5-0 to West Ham. We have a fantastic result against Arsenal, and then we go away the following week to Aston Villa and we draw that game. So, yeah, it's just so many inconsistencies. We have really big, high performances and big results. We beat Manchester United, and then the following week you lose to, I can't even remember which team it was now, but we lose. So we're right.
We know your tactic now, Farah.
Yeah, but I mean, even at home, in terms of home performances, we've won one game at home this season. So for us, you know, that's something that as a collective we're very disappointed with, because we expect more. And, you know, teams around us, we expect to beat. And when we don't, we're disappointed with that. And I think it's been a disappointing and a frustrating season, you know, for us as players and as a club. And especially with the work that the staff put in, you know, they put in unbelievable amount of work to try and get the game plans right for us to execute. And, you know, when results aren't going your way, it's easy to point the finger, but, you know, we take full responsibility and, you know, at times not executing the game plan, you know, fully. And a consequence of that is the results that we've ended up with.
All right, well, let's move on to a couple of other stories to get your reaction on, Farah. The Team GB women's football team now know who they're facing at this summer's delayed Olympics. They'll play host Japan as well as Canada and Chile. Quite a tough draw, isn't it, really?
Yeah, based on recent form of the England team, we're going to look at it like that, and if we're going to take a lot of the England players, I think for me, Heger's got to take a GB team and not just an England team if we want to give ourselves a chance of really pushing on, you know, the form of the likes of Ingle, Caroline Weir, Erin Cuthbert, Kim Little. These are the players that I think that have to have, you know, a chance of going to the Olympics with the Olympic team if we want to stand a chance of medaling at the Olympics. I mentioned Canada in terms of the group stages. After getting the result they did against England last week, we'll be confident with drawing us within the group. And Japan are always difficult opposition in terms of technically so good and always turn up in tournaments. So it's a tough group for GB to get out of. I think with the right squad selected, I think, you know, there's a fantastic group of GB players playing within WSL. I think, you know, if the right group, as I mentioned, selected, we've got a real good chance of going to medaling.
There's been a fair bit of disruption, obviously, with managerial changes and the pandemic as a whole. Do you think in terms of timing, this Olympic Games probably isn't the right timing for Team GB?
Yeah, I mean, it's been pretty much the same for most national teams. But yeah, I think, you know, especially the run of games and results England have had, winning 4 in 14 isn't good enough for an England team. So they would have liked to have got some momentum going into the tournament in terms of results. So yeah, I think timing of it hasn't come very well for us. But then saying that, if the Euros was going to be last year, we wouldn't have been in a good place either. So yeah, I think we need to get this out. For me, I'm looking ahead. I'm looking further ahead than the Olympics. I'm looking forward to getting Serena in September and seeing where she could take this exciting young England team.
Yeah. Here's some welcome news for the game, Farah. I know you've had big opinions on refereeing in the past. We've mentioned it in the podcast as well today. Mm-hmm. From next season, match officials operating within the Super League and Championship will come under the professional game match officials. This means the top refs in the women's game can gain access to the same facilities, training and support that those in the men's game receive. This is about time. A great move, but about time, isn't it?
Yeah, and for it's brilliant news. News that the game needs in terms of if we're really going to develop it. I think everything has to develop at the same sort of speed.
Is it going to be enough though?
I hope so. I mean, it's going to take time. It's like the women's game going professional. We expected everything to happen overnight, and us as females understand what being professional looked like. It's taken players a long time to understand that, and still we're still learning what being a professional footballer is. But I think the opportunity for these referees to give themselves a real good chance of developing and being better and making better decisions and being fitter, being able to keep up with the game. I think, you know, they turn up at a weekend and, you know, as players, we give them so much stick. And, you know, when they say to you, look, you know, I'm not full time and, you know, this is like a second job or whatever. It's difficult. It's hard.
Is that what you say when you said you give them stick? Do you say, like, you can't keep up?
I'm not one. You hear it. I mean, I was one of those. As I said, as I've got older, I've matured and those things that I get less stressed with referees now I'm older than I did when I was younger. But you hear us as players, you know what it's like when a decision goes against you. You know, you can give the referee some stick and sometimes justified, but most of the time not. And in terms of, you know, as you say, that them not being full time and not having the facilities to really develop, it's difficult for them.
Definitely a step forward. Well, we'll move on to the WSL next weekend and look at the action that's coming up. Saturday, it's a big game at the bottom, isn't it? Aston Villa against Bristol City. Has this got draw written all over it?
No, knowing Matt Beard the way that I do, he knows only, 3 points is what they need. And so for Bristol, I know that he certainly will be setting up his team to win that game. And they've got a good chance. They've got a striker in Ebony Salmon who is in fantastic form. And, you know, whether they play defensive and play on the counter with her or whether they play through build-up, give her a chance and she's got a chance of scoring. I think she's won.
It'll be interesting. Villa have got a good goalkeeper. Bristol City, they have got the better striker or strike support. So, interesting game to look forward to. You're away. So Reading away to Birmingham on Sunday. Again, Birmingham need those points. They're on 13 points, but they're still in the relegation mix. How were you set up for this one? What's your mindset when you're playing a team who's desperate for survival?
We're desperate for points, so that's how we're looking at it. Because, you know, for us, it's been sometimes maybe not intentionally as players you've overlooked it, but when you compete with big teams and then you see, you know, teams that are fighting at the bottom, you know, the mentality in terms of the approach to the game sometimes can be different. And, you know, we've had to really switch on this week in terms of what we need to go to Birmingham and deliver. And so, yeah, the girls are fully switched on and aware of what's needed in that game. And it's a big 3-pointer for us because, you know, we're desperate for points this year.
Other games on Sunday include Manchester United facing Spurs. We've heard the news that Tobin Heath is out for the rest of the season. That'll be a big miss for them. Arsenal against Brighton, West Ham host Everton. And there's also that Chelsea Champions League semi-final, as we've mentioned before, against Bayern Munich. Any final word on any of those fixtures that you're looking out for?
Arsenal Brighton, I think that'll be interesting. I think, you know, Hope's found a way of setting Brighton teams up against these top teams and frustrating them. They did it against Chelsea and got a result. They've got a result against Man City. So it'll be interesting because as well, Manchester United and Arsenal fighting for that third, you know, Champions League spot.
All right, Farah, well, your insight and your experience on the game, always appreciated here on the show. Thank you so much for joining us. Is this your debut appearance as a co-host on The Offside Rule? I think it might be.
Yeah, I think it is. Thanks for having me on. Hopefully it's not the first and last.
No, I'm hoping there'll be more, as long as I haven't insulted you.
No, you haven't.
Well, if you missed our 10 years of the WSL episode, it features Farah, Willie Kirk, speaking so highly of her play, as we mentioned earlier on in the show. Do check it out. It also features West Ham's Gilly Flaherty, loads of WSL memories flooding in as well from Casey Stoney, Eni Aluko, Sue Smith, and many more. I also must mention ones that we couldn't fit in the show, including Katie Wyatt, who we heard from earlier, and Glenn Moore, who's been covering the women's game for many years. We couldn't fit them in the WSL anniversary show, but thank you for replying.
I think it's almost worse, you actually pointing it out. Thank you, but no thank you.
maybe. Would you prefer to know, Farah, and have a shout out? What do you think? Have I done the right thing?
Yeah, you've done the right thing. I'm just going to say yeah.
What else are you doing aside from preparing for this next match? Have you got your sights on anything else this week? Are you doing any more media?
No, just some coaching with the Reading RTC on Friday night. So my Friday night is now a coaching our under-14s. So we've had two good results. We beat Tottenham 5-0 the other week, and then we've got a draw against Arsenal, which for our age group, in terms of where Arsenal are at, is a fantastic result. So we're building. And
go Farah.
Good to watch them, yeah.
Mm. Don't forget, you can catch up with everything Offside Rule at Offside Rule Pod on Twitter and Insta, and our website as well, offsiderulepodcast.com. There's a full breakdown, by the way, if you would like to rerun Lyon's exit from the Champions League, the historic game, really. There, you can relive that via the website. Plenty of other features, interviews and articles there for you to check out.
Thanks once again to Farah for her time, to Katie Wyatt as well, and we'll see you again next week.
You've been listening to the Offside Rule WSL edition, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Keep up to date with everything Offside Rule at offsiderulepodcast.com and by following at Offside Rule Pod on Twitter and Insta. Check out all of the Athletic's football podcasts on Apple, Spotify and all the usual places, or listen ad-free on the Athletic app. The Offside Rule WSL edition is a Muddy Knees Media production.
The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.